Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Hey, architecture firm owners and emerging leaders. Get ready for unparalleled insight into the development of a world-class architecture firm and a worldwide organization driving the digital transformation of the design and construction industry. With Build Smart, the podcast that's changing how our profession operates. We share the incredible stories behind innovation in the building industry with my friend and co-host, Patrick McLamey, FAIA, former CEO of the international architecture firm, HOK.
You know, Yamasaki's office or firm lasted during his lifetime. And when he passed away, I think that was the end of the Yamasaki office. Helmuth did not want that. He wanted a firm that would live out and grow beyond the founders.
In season one, discover the untold stories behind HOK's meteoric rise. From 150 employees in St. Louis to a powerhouse with over 1,900 staff members and 27 offices worldwide.
You know, they weren't as polite as the Kojima people. That was just boom. And anytime you have a creditor, whether it's Kojima or the bank, that wants their money, unless you can raise money someplace else, you are out of business.
Bankrupt. And hold on tight for season two, where Patrick takes us on a new adventure as chairman of Building Smart International, shaping the future of digital transformation in the design, construction, and operation of built assets.
Ian Howell, Ken Harold, and I, Ken was my technical representative from HOK. The three of us took a tour of Europe of five cities in 5 days. Very busy time.
Simply follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Smart now and uncover lessons that will transform you and your architecture firm. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Today, I'm joined by Susan Barnes and Robin Wilcox of Skylab, a Portland-based design firm known for creating architecture that's deeply connected to place and purpose. Susan and Robin bring decades of experience across hospitality, residential, and commercial projects, from the Nike World Headquarters Serena Williams Building to Mountain Town Master Plans in Deer Valley, Telluride, and beyond. In this episode, we're going to explore how Skylab approaches placemaking, designing spaces that not only honor legacy and landscape, but also make strong business sense for clients and communities. Susan Barnes and Robin Wilcox, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I've heard you both, I don't know if you were both on it, but I heard the episode on Detailed, our cat's podcast, about the Serena Williams Building. And I'm excited to have a conversation with you both about your firm, how your firm works, the philosophy behind your firm. So I'm excited to have you both here. Let's start off with your origin stories. When did you discover your passion for architecture, and who or what inspired you to get started? Susan, let's start with you.
Great, thanks. My origin story, I grew up in a family that was very art and architecture and engineering oriented. And so I had an influence from family beginnings, but then really found my passion and pathway to architecture while I was at the University of Michigan. Met some really wonderful professors and fellow students who were having more fun in the architecture studio than sitting in the library doing reports. So I took the leap and just haven't looked back. Have enjoyed my education and then practice through some really wonderful design firms and to where I finally landed at Skylab for the past 13 years.
So all in the Pacific Northwest?
Yes. Started in San Francisco and then moved up to Oregon about 20 years ago and have been at Skylab for about the past 14 years.
All right. And you said that your parents are creative and are they architects or engineers? Or
my dad was a packaging engineer who always wanted to go to architecture school. So when I expressed my interest, he was one of my biggest supporters, sending Mylar sheets, drafting supplies, and was very supportive.
What does a packaging engineer do?
He designed packages for some major national brands, doing all of the
product packaging,
you know, from logistics to materials to efficiencies and sustainability issues. So it was fascinating to watch his career relative to how we work as an architect too. Very, a lot of similarities.
I love package design. It's like when it's done well, it's really, really amazing to, especially, you know, you buy an Apple product and they're like the master, right, of package design. But I can imagine as a child having that just be part of your life, that design and the way things work and fit into one another just becomes part of who you are and the way you're raised.
Yes. And material studies. And
yeah,
it was all a lot of influential moments and explorations.
Yeah. I find that's why I love the origin story, because I love to hear where you came from, right? To understand where those influences are and to connect the dots. And certainly that's, you know, I'm sure there's lots of dots in your story, but that's certainly a big dot that your dad designed packaging and it was part of your life. Interesting. Robin, how about you? What's your story?
So I was not one of those kids that knew that they wanted to be an architect right out of the gate. My first real memory of like focusing on architecture and the experience was my parents are both teachers and just exploring the Kansas State University campus, like as a child, and just probably getting into places I shouldn't have been in and walking through buildings and just really loving that exploration of kind of finding things and wandering through those buildings on that campus. I went to the University of Oregon. It was the only architecture school I applied to. I didn't really know what I was getting into. Like I had been a kid that liked to draw and do art growing up.
Is that what inspired you to pursue architecture?
It was.
It was a creative
side. It was. Yeah. I like had a hunch that it would be something that I would love to do.
Do you remember how you made the connection between the art and the creativity to the profession of architecture? Was there somebody specific in your life that introduced you to it, or did it sort of just evolve?
I think it was a little bit of a flyer. Like, I don't know. It might have been, I'm trying to remember what my 18-year-old self was thinking at that time, but
sure,
you know, it seemed like a practical application of like artistic interest.
Yeah, it made sense.
And I don't know if I fully understood what the breadth of opportunities were then, but went to U of O, it was a 5-year program, learned a lot there. Like, I think I came out of the school still like in a learning mode and moved up to Portland, worked for a sole practitioner for 4 years. When I started there, it was just me and him, and that was a great educational experience. And then I've been lucky to work in design offices in Portland since. Susan and I have kind of overlapped in a couple of those offices in Portland, and we're lucky that we have so much design talent, you know, in this area. And Portland as a city has been, I think when we got here and for the last 20, 30 years, has really felt like a place where you can kind of do what you want to do, you know, you can kind of follow your passion here and there aren't a lot of roadblocks to it.
Yeah. So what brought you both to Skylab? You both said that you've been there a while, but what brought you there?
So like Robin, I've worked in a lot of very design-focused architecture firms through my career. And I knew, got to know Jeff and Brent while, you know, here in Portland and before, and started a conversation with them. And they, Skylab at the time was growing, you know, kind of a midlife firm, and saw lots of potential and opportunities for leadership, both in the firm and then creativity and the design opportunities and design approach. And it really just resonated with me, you know, a lot of just the, like I said, the potential and the opportunities and leeway to create my own path in the architecture profession. So that has really been the foundational element of what the office of Skylab that I've been able to impart and grow in.
What about you, Robin? What attracted you to Skylab?
I had admired the work of Skylab for a number of years, and I got a call from Susan when Skylab got the Serena Williams building at Nike, and with the invitation to come work on that project. And that was what brought me to Skylab, like getting a chance to work on that project with Susan and Jeff and Brent, and just to be a part of something like that. And then also to join Skylab just all seemed like no-brainers at the time. And so that was 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Been a great run since. That project, it was a great achievement, I think, for our office, but it was also a really incredible learning experience for, I think, individually for Susan and I, and like leading that project, and just for our office as well. Like, it was 1 million square feet, really complicated program, and just, you know, a challenging undertaking, but it came off so well. And I think we brought a lot to that project that maybe wasn't in the original program. And individually, it was just a great learning curve, and I think set us up for some of the future, like bigger scope projects that we've been doing since.
From what I understand, Skylab's known for integrating architecture and interiors and master planning, the whole project. How does that holistic approach shape the experience of the projects that you build?
I think that's one of our unique approaches to the design process and exploration of potential projects and creativity. We are brought in very early in a most kind of a creative agency kind of way, where we, you know, facilitate and help with master planning concepts, looking at it from both the, you know, kind of placemaking, the brand concept, the narrative of the story of the potential of the project, also the, you know, the client's goals. And then how can we elevate those goals through kind of our design process that really focuses on, again, the narrative of the project, concept of kind of regeneration, and then innovation. Like, the background of Skylab is both an architecture firm, but have experience in development and contracting and building. And so really trying to use that lens to look at the project holistically, whether it's, you know, our small project, or like Robin saying, 1 million square feet for Nike, and or some of the more recent mountain projects that we've been doing that are entire villages over, you know, multiple years.
We do a lot of different types of projects, everything from single family, residential, multifamily, retail, commercial, a lot of mountain work and restaurant. So just like a real broad range of projects that is, you know, having sort of expertise in all those areas make the kind of lens you look at with master planning and some of these bigger development projects that are almost like, you know, small towns or like a piece of urbanism and not a building. It lends to, I think, having a proactive way of tackling those and really understanding what the opportunities are there. And I think sort of our lack of like specific focus on one specific sector of architecture has become a real strength of ours.
Yeah. The projects that Skylab does typically, like you're talking about, they start from like even the branding all the way through full the master planning, right? So it's very small details all the way through full, you know, residential and commercial developments, which allows you to take in all of the setting, right? And then the landscape and all of the things around it that truly creates a place. And placemaking is something that you're famous for. How do you define placemaking and how does that fit into the philosophy of Skylab?
Susan talked a little bit about building the story of a project. So we start projects with this kind of research phase and looking at both what we like call the art and the science of the place. So trying to understand the people, the geology, the environment, the culture of that place, but also like understanding the program, kind of the business.
What does that process look like? Is there questionnaires, meetings? How does that process of early discovery actually happen?
I think oftentimes we have a pretty broad lens. And so there'll be conversations with the client if we're already on the project, where you trying to understand what their kind of needs and wants and interests are, understand the program. But there's also like an individual or a pass at looking at like, you know, things that we might look at that we're not directed to, like what's the watershed of this area? What are the species of animals and where are they? You know, what is the cultural history of this place? And trying to sort of evoke those with images and contrasting sort of ideas and present those to the owner and start building this, or the client, and start building the story. And some of that, like, it starts pretty broad and it will get refined down to the story of this project. And it's something that will carry through the whole project. So like when you are advancing the design and DD and CDs, you have that to refer to, like when you're trying to make decisions about details or materials, things like that, you always kind of have that story as like the guiding light for that project. And it's great. I mean, the other real nice thing about it is that the client has bought in on that as well. It's really kind of a cohesive piece that everybody is committed to. And so it can help keep the project on track. You know, all projects face challenges with value engineering, other choices that you have to make as you go, but it's nice to have that kind of guiding light to refer back to.
Do you find that typically your clients are attracted to Skylab because of that process? Or do you find that that's an educational step that you have to go through, right? You're doing this voluntarily and then presenting it to your clients to educate them that, oh, here's how we work. Is there one or the other that happens with your clients?
I think we attract both. You know, through as we've been growing, you know, I think that reputation of that process and resultant of the process has become more apparent, and especially built projects. But at the same time, you know, we just try and help every client search for that undiscovered moment that really imbues and makes the place, you know, kind of like every firm, right? We run into those value engineering issues and planning issues, but if we can hold tight to that, you know, the foundational thinking, you know, the resultant place always is an undiscovered moment that clients and visitors and public or private can enjoy.
It sounds like because you go through that process with the client, and hopefully the client buys into that story and those concepts, that later on when you talk about value engineering and changing design and shifting focus, that you can always come back to that original concept and say, hey, remember this amazing stuff and how excited we were about it? And, you know, we're going to lose that if we do this and this. Sure, it's a critical tool in your process.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's interesting too, because it becomes part of the outreach to the larger community, like recently projects in Deer Valley and Alyeska, Girdwood, Alaska. Like that is something that people outside of your client group, like in the larger community, can understand as well. And I think it helps build credibility and understanding sort of in the larger community.
What do those projects look like when you talk about the master planning and getting involved in the community being impacted? How do they start, and like, what are you being hired to do? What's the scope of that project?
I can speak to the Deer Valley project, which is in Park City, Utah. The Deer Valley, you know, has been a long established ski resort in that region, and they were looking to expand a portion of their community and establish kind of a new base village that, you know, was a mixed use of preserving a lot of the parking, which is really, you know, essential to a lot of local skiers. And, but at the same time, you know, kind of creating a place for everyone, for all visitors, guests, people who live there. And so, you know, how do we create a new modern mountain village that is a place people want to go to, spend time, also expand Deer Valley's into a four-season destination and make it at a scale that is accessible, right? That it's not oversized, that the streets and main plaza zones are very pedestrian friendly and just really welcoming. And so we worked hearing both the Deer Valley client and the local community, you know, kind of respond to some of these pretty significant design goals. You know, we've been listening, also trying to, you know, give as much feedback as we can to the community presentation process and hearing those voices. We've made some changes based on feedback, you know, especially at such a large public scale. And we think, you know, it keeps getting better and serving the Park City region and transportation issues and energy and sustainability goals of both the client and the community. I think we've been able to really tap into and support, you know, that kind of communication and feedback loop.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Gain lessons learned and credits earned with Arcademy, ARCAT's continuing education program. Listen to popular episodes of the Detailed podcast and earn AIA-approved HSW credits. Yes, you heard that right, HSW credits for episodes of Detailed podcast. Listen to an episode, check out the learning objectives, and use what you've learned while listening to take the course. The program is free, it's simple, and can be found at arcat.com under the Resources tab. Or just go to arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. That's arcat.com/arcademy. Please visit our sponsors today and thank them. Thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. From an architect's point of view, it sounds like such a fun project to be able to create an entire neighborhood and city, and from the roads to the building lots to the trees, all of it.
Yes, and almost all of it is built over an underground parking garage, which makes it even more challenging how to, you know, kind of hide all of that infrastructure, but create a real sense of a place on top of that. Plus land a gondola terminal on top of a parking garage.
Yeah. So, wow. Pretty amazing engineering feat on top of the design.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe another note that how we've grown and tried to be successful is, you know, also partnering with consultant teams that support the design goals and the professional sophistication that, you know, I think some of these projects require. And, you know, we definitely learn from them and value this large teams working together.
Is a project like that, is the client the resort or is the client the municipality?
Primarily the resort, but the community is, you know, they are so intricately woven into the community that, you know, they are kind of one of the foundational economic drivers in the community, but at the same time, wanting to be really respectful partners in how the region grows.
Yeah, I can imagine that because it's a private client, you have a little bit more control and freedom over what it is, as opposed to working for a municipality where you may be working with councils and committees and different neighborhood, you know, you're still dealing with the neighborhood and the citizens, but the ultimate decision makers are probably, and I'm assuming, have a little bit more control over what can be done and what can't be done.
Yeah, I'm especially based on, you know, economics and budgets and, you know, moments like that. But again, just there has to be that public-private partnership to really make right. any of these large-scale projects successful, which I think Robin has experienced in at Alyeska and Girdwood too.
Yeah, the project at Alyeska is about, you know, 450,000 square feet. There's an existing hotel at the resort that was built in the 90s, 8-story, like rather large hotel. Client wants to add a, like essentially for sale housing and a whole mountain village adjacent to that. They'll have commercial space, food and beverage, you know, base camp for your outings into the wilds of Alaska and skiing, biking, hiking. And in addition to that, there's a whole more community focused section of the program that's about a third of the program that is workforce housing, which is a major sort of program to tackle in a lot of these resort towns where, you know, housing for employees is just really hard to find and expensive. So there's that and more sort of community focused things like some retail spaces, like potentially a hardware store, food store, rec center, daycare. And just like, so when we were looking at that, we were kind of looking at that, like brought this idea of that being kind of like a frontier town sort of feel. Like you have a main commercial street that has covered space for shelter from snow and rain, but that almost gives like this sort of harkens back to a frontier town kind of vibe. And the first couple buildings coming out of that are starting to be built now. So the daycare, which is actually a separate client, it's on resort land, but Little Bear's Playhouse is a separate client. And that project is under construction right now. And the first one that the resort is going to tackle is a 60-room workforce housing building on that same site.
So when you're working with a master plan project like that, are you typically also hired to design the buildings and everything down to the streetlights?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like we definitely want to do all that. Right. I'm not sure that that would always have to be the case that, but like we want to lead that work and down to the streetlights and details and bollards and all the things. And both at Deer Valley and Alyeska, that is the case. Like we have a great consultant team. We have amazing partners for landscape architecture and designing the outdoor spaces with the same kind of energy that you take to the buildings. So we feel like we're well set up for that. Like we have interior design, we have architecture, we have a shop and fabrication here at Skylab as well. We have brand designer. So, you know, we will do as much as we can. And I think having that sort of singular vision on these projects has led to a lot of success.
You had mentioned, Robin, that your project was influenced by the concept of the frontier town. Do you have any other influences, both of you, you know, in terms of the work that you do with placemaking and master planning, any projects that, or developments or cities even, historically or more modern, that influence your work? Anything that really inspires you and gets you excited?
Yes, and you know, I think like our conversation around how influential just the actual place where we are being asked to evaluate, really looking at those environmental and site contexts, like Deer Valley, you know, there's the strong influence of the European mountain town, right? That those are scaled in such a way that we're from animal and cart paths, right? A lot of them. And so how do you take that wonderful sense of scale and environment, but not create, you know, not duplicate it and replicate it in such a way that it's, you know, kind of too theme parked.
Right, you don't want to create Disneyland.
Yeah, but has an authenticity to the location, to the goals of the project and to the site, and then meet the client's needs for, you know, program and spaces. And so we really try to infuse both of those together. You know, we love the historic, some historical references, but then how do we reinterpret them in a kind of a modern way? We work a lot in mass timber, you know, kind of heavy timber structure. How do we take that warmth, that feel of nature, and bring it into, you know, this new buildings and context that both meets some of the sustainability goals and tectonics of construction, while also being having that wonderful wood expression thin and on the outside of the buildings. So I think that's kind of how we do look at a lot of historic references, but then how do we interpret them in current context and modern way?
Yeah, just say Alyeska, the village, I think there was a driving or precedent for that was the environment around us, like Girdwood, and Alyeska is situated in this amazing valley in the Chugach mountain range. It's the northernmost rainforest in North America. So it has this real dichotomy of like being like wetlands and shrubs and trees kind of growing out of like water just seems to be the story kind of almost everywhere. And then a mountain right next to it. So we were really looking at that surrounding environment and designing the buildings in such a way that they start to like take some hints from that, like looking at the space between buildings. Like we had this phrase, the valley in the valley, like creating sort of view corridors and a space between, like a sheltered space between the buildings that was reminiscent of the greater valley that we were sitting in. And then looking at the strata from wetlands to the forested canopy up to the alpine, and the sky is sort of a metaphor for how we were thinking about the buildings, like the base of the building, the kind of interstitial floors and the roof line and how it meets the sky, and kind of using that surrounding topography as a way to think about the materials and the expression of those layers of the building.
Yeah. It sounds like such fun work. I know it's a lot of work because you're dealing with a lot of things and a lot of people and a lot of layers of design. But from a designer's point of view, being able to design everything from the road layout all the way down to the accessories would be a pretty exciting process. How long does a project like that take? I mean, by the time you are hired to the point where you start digging holes, how long does that process take?
It can definitely take upwards, you know, 5 to 8 years. And I think that just depends on the kind of the master plan phasing goals of a project and client. You know, some are kind of a, you know, push to get it to completion date. Others, you know, obviously evolve over a number of years. So our Deer Valley project will be about a 5 to 6 year design to construction schedule.
Yeah. Are there operational and financial economic benefits to the client when you're working at a project that's so all-inclusive and controlled by one design team?
I think so. Like, I think there's certainly like the management of multiple design teams and sort of the streamlining of that process, I think, can help probably both in like the amount of time a client has to dedicate to a project and also the overall timeline of a project. I think some of these big scale projects like do take a lot of manpower within the office. Like I think when we were working on Nike and I think the Deer Valley team, like we might have 20 to 25 people in our office working on that. And I think that's just a big undertaking for everyone, like for an architecture firm, like a medium-sized firm like us. Like we've had to learn how to manage our own processes in our office to be able to attack projects like this in an efficient manner and sort of focus our efforts. And, you know, I think the other thing that we bring is just in this process is like creative thinking about economics and how you build something that is kind of overall to the whole project. Because I mean, I think probably all projects or most all projects have challenging budgets. And like these are not any different than that. Like you are trying to strategically figure out how to kind of build the vision, but do it in a compelling way, but in a cost efficient way. And then also just timelines, like these mountain projects, especially like you have a limited building window, you know, when like
Right. Really
from May to November where you're building. And so things like modular and prefab and getting really sort of granular about the strategy of like how we can do as much offsite and come in on site and put the building up in an efficient manner.
I can imagine that going through that process and learning things along the way from project to project, that there are ways that you would do the next project differently. What's the future look like for Skylab in terms of placemaking and master planning? Are there specific goals that you'd like to achieve? Any projects that someday you'd love to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of our strengths and what I love about Skylab is we have such diverse project types and, you know, both in scale and size and client type and creativity. One of our kind of sayings is, yes, we can do that. You know, we will kind of use some of our foundational approaches to a project, but then see where we need to grow, where we need to expand our kind of expertise and needs relative to delivering a project. But I think we're open to anything.
Yeah.
We've even designed the top four levels of one of the largest cruise ships in the world. Like, so,
wow.
Yeah. So we've, you know, down to, I'm helping get a permit in Pioneer Town, California for a Quonset hut project that we've worked with one of our clients on. So it's something that I love about Skylab. And we really try and be as diverse a project type as possible. Obviously, we love mountain projects and specialize in that scope too.
I think there are definitely project types that we would love to have and kind of broaden our reach into higher education projects, university projects, museums, theaters, performance spaces. I mean, they're all like projects that we think we're very well suited for. And that's work that we're actively trying to add to the work that we do.
I love it. All right. Let's wrap things up with the final question. This is a question that I ask all my guests. And this could be a business tip, could be a personal habit you have that works for you. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? Susan, I'll start with you.
I think just having an open lens to what is possible and really bringing that kind of creativity to every project and every project type, always thinking of every project as being on that equal plane of execution and excellence and really having a goal of, you know, making the place better than, you know, kind of when you found it, both for the client and for the community.
Yeah, I love that. How about you, Robin?
I would just say maybe fostering relationships and, you know, keeping connected to the things that you're passionate about and getting involved in building those relationships and keeping relationships up, whether they're inside kind of the architectural world or outside of that. Because I think the bringing in work is a constant focus. And I think we find that so much of the work that we have is built on relationships that we've built over the years. And so it's just in moments like this where the economy is maybe a little, we're not quite sure where we're going. I think there's even more focus on keeping relationships and building relationships outside of your individual office.
Great answers. The idea of the relationship is so important for architects to not only bring in the next work, but as technology continues to evolve and take over more and more of the work that we do as architects, that human-to-human connection is going to become even more and more important. So, yeah, great answer. Susan Barnes and Robin Wilcox are their names. Skylab Architecture, you should check out what Skylab is doing at skylabarchitecture.com. They do some amazing work And this has been a really inspiring conversation. So thank you for coming and sharing a little bit about the work that you do and joining us here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. It was fun.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link to this episode with a friend. Either just click the share button or highlight the URL and send the link to this episode with a friend, because that's how Entree Architect has grown to serve thousands more architects just like you. Throughout the 10 plus years of Entree Architect, that's how we've grown, architect to architect. So I would love for you to share this episode and all the episodes with one friend every week. We'd love that. And thank you to our sponsors for this episode. We don't have an episode if there's no sponsors. So thank you to our sponsors. Links to those sponsors, which you should go visit and click, and all the resources that we discussed today for this specific episode, they are all available at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Every episode that we've recorded is there, entrearchitect.com/podcast. Go click the links to the sponsors and say hello. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. You should go visit that at gablemedia.com. That is the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to select episodes of this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast. Yes, AIA CEUs for listening to a podcast. It's there, and many other podcasts are there as well. And you can listen to all of them and get credit. Learn more about our program, Gable Members Program, at the gablemedia.com/members website. That's gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, join us today at Entree Architect Network. That is the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. If you own your own architecture firm, you are an entrepreneur architect. You are an Entree Architect. With weekly live group business coaching, yep, we have business coaching there, monthly live business training with AIA CEUs, 2 a month, so 24 AIA credits per year, including 12 of those are HSWs. We have them in the membership. Business resources, all the resources you need to run your business, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects just like you. Hundreds of architects are there waiting for you to join. So we provide the support and encouragement you need to succeed as a small firm architect. I know that you haven't been trained as a business person when you launched your firm. That's what we do. Come learn how to run a business at Entree Architect Network. And today you can go join right now for free for 30 days at this link, entrearchitect.com/30days will give you free 30 days for membership. Go check it out at entrearchitect.com/30days, and I will see you there. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I want you to remember 3 words: love, learn, share. Have a great day.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA, to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here. Are you NCARB certified yet? Join the network of over 45,000 architects who have the NCARB certificate to expand your professional reach. By becoming NCARB certified, you are demonstrating that you've met the national standards for licensure, a qualification that can be an important factor for firms when hiring and promoting. Certificate holders have a streamlined path to apply for a reciprocal license in all 55 U.S. jurisdictions, as well as access to an extensive library of free continuing education courses. Learn more today at ncarb.org.